everybody. Jeff Jones here. Welcome to the weekly Chase Oaks Church podcast. Before we dive in, I want to encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel and download the Chase Oaks Church app. The app is the best place to catch up on messages, engage with our community, and stay in the loop with everything going on around here. Most importantly, my hope is that today's message inspires you to take your next step in your faith journey. Here we go. Well, hello, everybody. So glad to see you as we start a new series. Those of you who are online, as well as those at Legacy here on our Friday night service. And you just heard Liz, or if you're on a campus, maybe your host, talk about influencer. And let me just back that up a little bit, or just give a little bit more to it. From my perspective, too, if you are or want to be part of shaping the experience of this church and the influence that God wants us to have as individually we're scattered around where God has placed us, as and as well collectively as a church, and you want to understand what we're about and help take us help take steps forward, please show up at Influencer next, not tomorrow but next Saturday, and I really do believe you'll be glad that you did. So today we are starting the new series called Simplify, which is all about making sure that we build our lives in a world of clutter where we're pulled so many different directions, where there's so many distractions, so much to fill our lives, that we're not missing what's most important, but in fact, building our lives around that which is most important. And that's important, and simplify maybe even sounds simple since it has the word simple in it, but simple is not easy. Making our lives more simple and focused is important, but it is not easy. I mean, even think about decluttering a house. You know, I looked at that Marie Kondo thing. You know what that is? I didn't know much about it. So I looked online and looked at the website and all that and thought, wow, like there's consultants that you hire and all this stuff that you do, and there's all these principles and all this teaching and all this stuff, and then all these things that you have to buy, or you don't have to, I guess, but you can. And I'm all for it. I think it's great. But I thought, wow, that's complicated. I mean, it would be great to be on the other end of that, but it's not easy getting to that. It takes some effort, takes some intention. Well, that's just decluttering our house. We're talking about something far more important, and that is decluttering our lives. And again, making sure that we're not pulled in ways and distracted by things that aren't actually the most important things. And how do we make sure we build our lives around that which is most important, especially in a culture like this? When my parents were young married and they had my brother was 7 years older than me, so I wasn't in the picture then. Because in this story, my brother was a preschooler, my dad was in graduate school, and my mom got a job that she could take my brother with her as a preschooler because she was a secret shopper. So she would go to different businesses and restaurants and stores just as a shopper, as a customer, and then give a report of the experience and what was going on. And that was great until my brother, who's like 3 or 4 and he was smart, started figuring out what was going on, that they were there to experience and then give a report. So one of the organizations was that they worked for, or was it a customer, was Baskin-Robbins 31 flavors ice cream. So pretty cool, right? To be able to go and just get ice cream and report on it. And yet my brother kind of figured out what was going on as a 3-4-year-old. So he would, you know, go up to the counter and he would say, please tell me all the flavors. I cannot read. And so then they would have to say all 31 flavors. Now he knew what he was going to order, because he always ordered the same thing, vanilla. He always ordered vanilla. And as I came along and got to know him, that just drove me nuts. Because like, Steve, vanilla is not even a flavor. That's like something, you know, you put a flavor on top of vanilla or in vanilla, but vanilla is not a thing. Like, you can't just order vanilla. But he loved vanilla. And he always, any vanilla people out there? A few. All right. Well, a lot, actually. Well, God loves you. So he had, you know, he always ordered vanilla, and he knew he's going to order vanilla. And yet he wanted to see how they would respond, just even as a little one. And so he would, and so after they said all the 31 flavors, he would then look at my mom and say something like, I don't think he wanted to tell me all the flavors. I don't think he was very nice. You need to tell. them, you know? So then she had to get another job or start doing other stuff because he was blowing their cover, this little four-year-old secret shopper. But back then, 31 flavors, really big deal. That was like the first business I can remember that had that kind of option, you know, feel like 31 flavors. That's why it's in the title. It's like 31. Whoever thought of 31 options? And of course now, that's not that big a deal, 31 options. But that was back in the day when, you know how many TV stations, there was no streaming, no internet. You know how many TV stations there were? Four. And one of them was PBS, so that doesn't even count. So it's like, you know, 3.5 stations. And that's it, you know, no streaming, no anything. And now think about our world, right? So many options, so many demands, so many good things, so many distractions, so many not so good things. I mean, just, it is so easy in our world to be so diffused and so distracted and pulled in so many ways with competing demands and distractions and good things and whatever, that it's really, really hard to live a focused life. But the problem with that is the amount of focus we have is also corresponds with the amount of effectiveness we have in life. And how can we be sure? And that's what we're going to talk about today. Today, we're going to be talking about the principle. It's a Jesus principle. We'll hear from him. The principle of the one thing, of having an understanding and an openness to the one thing, even though we'll do lots of things, but the one thing in any given moment, season, interaction, day, whatever, the one thing that is most important, most significant, so that we don't lose that and we don't cheat that. The principle of the one thing. And if you and I can grab hold of the principle of the one thing and begin practicing the principle of the one thing, like Jesus, I believe we'll be far more effective. Because simplify is not about not being busy. Jesus lived a busy life. He lived a focused life. And so let's make sure as we're living a life where, yeah, it's full and all kinds of stuff is going on. That's great. But let's just talk about the principle of the one thing. So Jesus, of course, modeled that. You could look at just the way he lived his life. But today we're going to hear him talk about it. We're going to hear him tell some really good friends, and a good friend in particular, to teach a lesson of the one thing so that we can learn it too. Now, this where this is in the Bible, if you want to follow me, is in the book of Luke. That's in the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, Luke chapter 10. And in Luke 10, in that part of his life, like really all of his ministry years, was a very busy time of life. There was a lot going on. A lot of people needing him, wanting him, all that. And he is on his way to Jerusalem, of course, with his disciples and other followers, on his way to Jerusalem, which at a time where it was a big feast time, a Jewish feast time, where all people all over the country would come. So it was just going to be crazy crowded with people. And as he's going into Jerusalem, he stops in a suburb of Jerusalem called Bethany, which was his pattern, was to stop there, spend the night, and then go on and walk to Jerusalem, be like McKinney to Dallas, about that far. And so as it is from Bethany to Jerusalem. So he stops in Bethany at a home of three friends, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. They were brother and sister to each other, not to Jesus. But Mary and Martha, Lazarus were all brother and sister to each other. And what you see in the life of Jesus is in the stories, they were very important to him because they were replenishing friends. And this is a bonus. You didn't pay for this if you gave today in the offering or whatever. This is just extra. But if in the way Jesus lived his life, I think this is really instructive, is as busy as he was, he always made time in his life for replenishing friendships. He didn't cheat that. And you and I can learn from that because we'll have all kinds of relationships, and we should. And some relationships are kind of neutral. They don't drain us or fill us. Some are draining relationships where people need us or needs, and they're just whatever. And we should love them. Jesus had plenty of those. But he also had relationships that were replenishing, that filled his tank. And it's important to make time for that. So that's what he's doing as he goes into Bethany. And here's the story in Luke 10, 38. As Jesus and the disciples continued on their way to Jerusalem, they came to a certain village, Bethany, where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. Her sister Mary sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he taught, but Martha was distracted by the big dinner she was preparing. Now, she was preparing a big dinner because when Jesus comes to your house, he didn't come alone. He's got an entourage. He's got his disciples and followers. There would have been a lot of people crowded into this living room. There would have been a lot of people to feed. And so Martha, there's two sisters, Martha and Mary. Martha gets busy doing what needed to be done. Somebody's got to start a meal because everybody's going to be hungry. And so she starts, she's in the kitchen and she starts cooking the meal, thinking, of course, that Mary, her sister, is going to come help her. And that's not happening. So she's in the kitchen. Mary's just sitting there at the feet of Jesus, listening to what he's saying with the other people. And Martha is only the only one in the kitchen. And guess what? She's getting increasingly ticked off, right? I mean, this isn't fair. This isn't right. How can Mary just, my sister, just be in there and make me do all this? And so as she's cooking, you can imagine after a while, she starts banging pans a little louder than they need and grumbling, under, you know, first under her breath and then out loud, well, if somebody would help me, this would be a lot, and all that. And not, and adding to that frustration was a cultural norm. The cultural norm in Jesus's day is that women like Mary did not sit at the feet of a rabbi like Jesus. In fact, in that culture, a rabbi would just say, excuse me, you're not even supposed to be here. You need to go in the kitchen. Now, that's not Jesus. That was their culture. We're going to do a sermon later in the year on Jesus and women, which is really interesting because he elevated women in that culture. And so for him, it was perfectly wonderful to have Mary there, even though in the culture, that wasn't a normal thing. And Martha doesn't understand all that. She just knows she needs to get her hiney in the kitchen and help me. And so she gets frustrated enough that she comes out and interrupts Jesus and his teaching. Verse 40, she came to Jesus and said, Lord, doesn't it seem unfair to you that my sister just sits here while I do all the work? Tell her to come and help me. Right? I'm doing this whole thing, this whole meal, and she's just sitting there. And you're acting like it's no big deal. Don't you think it's unfair? Will you please tell her, because she's not getting the hint, to come to the kitchen? And she fully expected Jesus to look at Mary and say, oh, I'm sorry, Martha. You're so right. Mary, come on. Go where you belong. But that's not what happens. Here's what Jesus says. But the Lord said to her, my dear Martha, you are worried and upset over all these details. There's only one thing. We're talking about the principle of the one thing. There's only one thing worth being concerned about in this moment. Mary has discovered it, and it will not be taken away from her. The principle of finding the one thing in the moment that will never be taken away if you seize it. But let's look, let's kind of examine the statement. So he looks at Martha, starts, and he says, my dear Martha. Which is kind of like, you know, growing up in the Deep South, I grew up in Alabama. I'm going to help you out. If you ever travel to the Deep South, I mean, now Texas is kind of the South, but Alabama is the South South. And when you go to the Southeast and you go to Alabama, at some point, you're going to hear somebody say to you, bless your heart, bless your heart. And what you're going to think, if you're not from the South or the Southeast, the Deep South, you're gonna think, oh, that is so sweet. What a sweet person that they would look at me and say, bless your heart. That is so nice. Alabama people, South people, they're just, Southern people are just the best. They eat fried food and they're just so nice. They say things like, bless your heart. But bless your heart is not nice. I'm just decoding it for you. If some of you are from like New York City, if I'm gonna translate that to New York City speak, a New York City person wanting to say the same thing, communicate the same thing would say, you're such an idiot. It means the same exact thing. Okay, bless your heart is just a very nice way of saying, you're such an idiot. You poor, misguided thing. Bless your heart. My dear Martha. In fact, in the original language of the New Testament, which is Greek, and that'll become, we'll talk about that a little bit later too. We'll look at some Greek stuff. Because the New Testament wasn't written in English. It was translated in English. It was, you know, written in Greek. And in Greek, it's not, all it is her name twice that Jesus says. What Jesus actually said literally was, Martha, 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 Martha. Has anybody ever done that to you? Or, I mean, if I did that to you and said your name, or you did that to me, I'd be like, it'd be tough to hear that. Like if you just say, Jeff, Jeff. You know, it's like, come on. And that's what he's saying, Martha, Martha. I mean, he loves her, but she's missing it. And she thinks she's on target, and she's not. And he said, you are worried and upset over all these details, but there's only one thing worth being concerned about. Mary has discovered it, and it will not be taken away from her. What he's saying is, look, I know you think you're doing what is most important in the moment, but it's not. It's actually a distraction from what's most important. And Mary has discovered it. She's found the one thing that is most important in this moment and will never be taken away from her. And what is the one thing that is most important? Jesus is in the house. Food can wait. I mean, Jesus has demonstrated already that he can handle food problems. He's fed the 5,000, if you know that story. He's turned water into wine. He can handle that too. But Mary is understanding that Jesus is not only a rabbi, not only the Messiah that's promised in the Old Testament, the Savior of the world, that's a big deal, but she's coming to understand him to be, because he claimed to be, and Christians understand him to be, God who took on humanity, God in human form. God is in your house. God, your creator, is in the living room. And for Mary, it's like, well, I'm going to be in the living room. I'm going to be right here at his feet. I'm not going anywhere. Food can wait. We'll figure it out. And Jesus said she figured out that one thing, and that experience will never be taken away from her. She will always have that experience because she saw the one thing in the moment and she grabbed hold of it, she seized it, and she'll have it forever. That is the principle of the one thing. Now, to help cement it, I'm going to ask Lauren to bring out a prop, which is actually I consider a historic artifact, because I use this. I think one of the first times Alabama in the recent era won a national championship. And for those who are just listening to this, it's one of those obnoxious number one things you hold up with, and this one has Alabama on the front. And for me now, it's just nostalgic. I mean, don't we all, you know, the national championship game is Monday night. Don't we all wish we could go back to the time where Alabama was playing for a national championship? Don't we? I mean, like, is anybody even going to watch Monday night? Does anybody even care? Notre Dame and Ohio State or whoever they are. I mean, who cares, right? I mean, do you know they had football? I mean, okay, now I'll cover this up, okay? How about that? To help us remember the principle of the one thing, all right? Because I want us to remember the principle of the one thing. Because there's lots of things in any given moment, any given season or whatever that we'll do and all that, of course. We're not just going to do one thing. But there's what Jesus is saying is in a moment, just like Mary found in that moment, there's often one thing that is by far the most important that we don't want to miss, because if we miss it, we won't have it. If we get it, we'll have it forever. It will be an experience that shapes us, that changes us, a memory that we always have. The Apostle Paul talked about the one thing too. He used that exact phrase in Philippians 3. He said, one thing that I do, no matter what. This is the one thing that drives me. And I don't have time to go into it. It's Philippians 3. Read it this weekend if you want to. His one thing in life that drove every decision that he made. There were lots of things that he did, but there was one thing he was going to make sure that he didn't cheat. That was his one thing. When you and I think about our life, there's so many ways that we can be pulled. There's so many things that we can do. And what is how do we figure out kind of the one thing? Well, Paul gives us some more help too, because he has another phrase. He uses the one thing, but he has another phrase that I think is really helpful. And at least it is for me. And to take this a little bit further, in the phrase that he used in the New Testament to communicate the same concept was redeeming the time. Redeeming the time. In Ephesians 5, he says, redeeming the time. And all the more as you see the day drawing near, and as the days are evil, that man, there's opportunity in these days, and don't lose the opportunity. Another translation says making the most of every opportunity. But redeeming the time, being focused, being not letting time go, but redeeming it, making it purposeful. Now, that's a cool phrase, redeeming the time in English, but it's way cooler in the original language of the New Testament, as I said, which is Greek. Because in Greek, there are two words translated time that they used all the time. One, this is, I'll just show you the what it looks like in Greek for the fun of it. So that's chronos. And chronos is the ticking of time. Like I have a $20 Walmart watch, and which means it ticks. I've learned that because cheap watches tick, expensive watches don't tick, but this ticks. So it's tick, 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 tick. That's chronos, the ticking of time. A minute, a second, a day, the linear progression of time, chronos. And so you think, well, redeem the time. It's make the most of every second, make the most of every minute. But that's not what Paul was talking about because he didn't use chronos. He used the other word. The other word, which is, I think, just such a cool word and Greek concept, is kairos. And kairos is the opportunity embedded in time. And the way the Greeks thought about it is that every moment has an opportunity attached to it. And that opportunity attached to it is kairos. And you either grab that moment or you missed it. And here's a depiction, an ancient depiction of kairos. They would, this painting, this is an ancient Greek painting, but notice they pictured kairos as a winged person or winged creature. He's got wings on his back and wings even on his feet. And he's got an interesting balding pattern going on. But look at his, if you look at his hair, he was often depicted as having this lock of hair sticking out and that you could grab. And the thought was this, this winged creature, okay, this view of opportunity embedded in time, that kairos would come in a moment, but only for a tiny, just like that. And you either grabbed him or you missed him. And he wouldn't stay long. So when that, whatever that is, that opportunity in a moment, the idea is you better grab for it now because once it's gone forever. That's what Jesus was saying about Mary to Martha. He's saying Mary has grabbed the opportunity, the one thing, and it will never be taken away from her because she grabbed it. But Martha, you're missing it. You'll never have it if you don't change, if you don't just come out here because you're missing the actual opportunity. You're missing the kairos moment. It's the principle of the one thing. That every moment, every season, and all that has an opportunity. I mean, even what we're doing right now, there's an opportunity embedded in this time that we're spending together. And what is the one thing that rises to the top? And what if we live life with that mentality? Intentional enough about it to say, hey, what, I mean, yeah, we'll do 100 things in the course of a day, but what one thing might be the most significant that I don't want to cheat, that I don't want to miss? So I want to play with that a little bit because I want us to begin living more intentionally with Jesus's principle in mind. So let's think about how we might live each day this way. And I've started to play with just this week. I wish I'd done it my whole life. But I've been, over the last couple days, of just asking myself the question at the beginning of the day, and you can do this maybe if you drink coffee, which I'm doing now in the morning. I'm so big and old and adultish now drinking coffee. And or maybe drink, you know, tea or Diet Coke or Diet Pepsi or whatever you drink. And in that time, just pray about it. Just ask God the question, God, what is most important today? I mean, I'm going to do 100 things today. But today, what is the one thing, what is the one opportunity that kind of rises to the top that I want to make sure I'm focused on, that I want to make sure I don't miss? And then each moment, break down the day. Even as you're going through the day. Like one way to think about a day is in segments. I'll get to moment in a minute, but like a segment of a day. So let's say you're a student and you go to school, or maybe you have a job and you go to work or whatever it is that you do. And in this segment of time of that day to think, you know, I'm gonna do 100 things at work today. There's 100 things that are gonna happen at school. But today, what is the one thing that might be the most important? And if you don't know it going into it, just be open. Say, okay, God, help me be sensitive to this. Help me be open and just look for the one thing that's most important. And I don't want to miss that. The one thing that you're doing, or the one thing somebody most needs, or the one opportunity I have to make the most impact. What is the one thing that's most important at work today, at school today, with a person I'm with today, whatever it is? And then, even as, and this is what I've, this has been so helpful already for me, even as I go into a moment, like for, I have a lot of meetings. So as I go into a meeting, or when I meet somebody for a meal or something like that, just to ask the question and to be open to it, God, what is most needed from me in this moment? What is the one opportunity of this moment? We may, you know, there may be 100 things or 10 things in a given moment or meeting, but what one thing is most important? And where it's been helpful for me as a leader is to think, okay, what one thing is most important for me in this meeting? And to be intentional about that. So it might be the most important thing for me in a meeting is to provide clarity. That what's needed is for me to make a decision, to listen to people, to get input, but then to make sure we're walking out with clarity and we have a decision and we know where we're going. Sometimes that's it. But sometimes that's not it at all. And my inclination is just to provide that, whether that's it or not. But to actually think about, hey, maybe this isn't it at all. Like when I'm with Christy a lot of times, for example, she's not always looking for me to make decisions or to give advice, right? Or a lot of people are that way. Like in a given situation, even at work and with a team or something, that what's needed for me is not to make a decision. Like that's maybe the worst thing that can happen. What's needed for me is to listen and to communicate value and to listen to their perspective and not just try to solve it like that and move on, but to just communicate value. Or sometimes it's with younger leaders, especially that you want to empower to say, hey, I'm not going to make the decision, right? I don't want to do that. I want you to make it because it's your decision. What do you need from me so that you can make a good decision? Maybe that's the best thing. Maybe that's the opportunity. So to think through in a given moment or in a conversation, what's most needed as we go through the day. So that's each day, each segment of the day, each moment of the day to think about that. You can also think of this in terms of seasons. You know, life happens in seasons. And what is most important in one season is not important at all or much less important in another season often. So for example, maybe you're in a season right now that's not such a happy one. It's a season of difficulty. Maybe it's a season of sickness, chronic sickness, maybe even terminal sickness, or you don't know, or you're scared it might be. And in that time where it's a serious period of sickness that you didn't see coming, and all of a sudden there it is, and your life is like changed, there's opportunity there. There's fear, there's all kinds of, I get that too. But there's opportunity there that you don't want to miss because this is a unique time. And to say, hey, in this season of either I'm sick or someone I love is, what is the one thing that we want to make sure that we don't miss? Like when my dad got Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS, the disease where your muscles stop working, your brain no longer communicates with your muscles. And so eventually your muscles atrophy, and if you keep going, that includes your heart. It's the last muscle to go, but eventually that goes. But it's not a good disease. And there's no cure. And so when he found out he had ALS, I'm so thankful that I realized, okay, we've only probably got, a couple years here, because he was 77 when he got it. And usually doesn't go really fast when you're that age. I mean, it usually goes fast when you're that age. And so it's like, well, don't know how long we have, but I'm not gonna miss this season. And I'm so thankful for all the times that we just snuck over for a day or 2 days or whatever. And as often as we could, just to be together. And there were so many sweet moments. There were some of the best moments of our relationship in that time that I'll always have with me. But I could have easily missed, just busy doing my thing, right? And so that's a unique season. There's seasons in your career that are different. Sometimes if you're starting a company or you're building something, or there's this big project, it's a season of intensity in your work life, and that's okay. That may be what's, you don't want to live that way forever and miss other priorities, but sometimes that's okay. There may be seasons where you can back off more, and you need to take advantage of that. There may be, think about seasons in family life. Like for those who are single, that may be a season like Jesus that you just keep going for a long time, or maybe for your whole life, but maybe not, and take advantage of the uniqueness of that season. If you're married without kids, take advantage of that season, because when you have kids, you're gonna wish you had. And some of you have little kids and you know the busyness of that stage. And often in that season, it's difficult because you're building your career and your career is growing and your career advancing at the same time you've got these little kids. And so you're busy in all these spheres and it's like, right? It's tough and you want to sleep and you remember what it was like when you slept, but when you were without kids and now you've got kids and you hear people like me, because you know where, some of you smell where I'm going. You're like, oh, he's going to say, don't miss these moments because it's so fleeting and little kid stage goes so quickly. And you're like, yeah, you come here and be me and tell me how quickly it goes, because it's going slow. Like, I just want to sleep. I can't even think about that. And yes, I am going to say that, because it's true. Because, you know, with perspective over time, you realize how true it is. And I made mistakes early on in that, where I was not taking advantage of that opportunity of our kids being little, being so busy in my job. And I'm thankful that through Christy and some other people, I was able to change that. But even in the middle of that, I remember this story and this is not a great story, but it was an impactful one for me. So I was putting my second son, Caleb, to bed, our youngest son. And so he's like 3 years old. And I'm reading him a story. And I let him pick the book. And I was tired. It had been a really busy, hectic day. And I just wanted to kind of get in, get out, get the kid to bed. That was my mentality. He had a different mentality, right? He just wanted to connect, wanted to read and all that. So the book that he picked out was not the one that I was hoping, because it was long. I mean, it was like 15 pages, okay? It wasn't, you know, War and Peace. He's three. But it was longer than the other ones. So I was like, okay. So I'm, you know, getting through, but I'm rushing through this book. And he can tell, because he stopped me. And he said, Dad, it's okay. You don't have to read the whole book. I can go to bed without the whole book. And it was like a knife just going, ah, what a dummy. Not him, me. Really? You know, what is most important in this moment is not getting through the book so I can get out of the room. What's most important in this moment is connecting to the heart of a three-year-old child and letting that three-year-old child know how valuable he is to me. That's the one thing that's most important in that moment. And spending that time that I will not get back. I wish I could. So I, of course, readjusted, right? I'm like, oh, Kayla, I'm so sorry. No, let's start over, and we're going to read the whole book. And we read a bunch more books that night, because you kind of get this, oh, you know. And in that phase, like, just remember, it is fleeting. It really is. And therefore, man, I know it's hard, but it's such a unique time. And then in parenting, you know, teenagers, what's most important in that phase? And then now, I mean, we're, you know, have grandkids and adult kids. And what's most important in this phase? And what one thing do I want to make sure that I do in the life of my kids and my grandkids? And we all get to work that out. But if we don't actually get a little bit intentional about it, we'll just miss the opportunities, just being busy and living life and not really thinking about it and not realizing that Kairos keeps landing and going away, landing and going away, landing and going away. And we're missing these one thing kind of moments. Does that make sense? So here's what I'm going to have us do. I'm going to have us practice that. So I'm speaking right now on a Friday night. That means we have a weekend ahead of us, Saturday and Sunday. And so right now, just prayerfully, if you're a Christian, just prayerfully, if not, you know, just think about it. Just what is the one thing, like, just start thinking, you know what, and you can, if you're with somebody, like married or something, you can talk about this afterwards. But what's the one thing maybe this weekend that's most important? And for me, like, there's some unique things in our weekend this weekend, and there's a lot of things we'll do, but I would not have come up with one thing that I've come up with had it not been for me preaching this message and thinking through it, and I would have missed it. And I'm not going to miss it. And so let me encourage you to think that way too. And then each day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, as we start the week, just as you start your week, just say, God, what is the, I mean, there's all kinds of things I'm going to do, but what one thing is perhaps most important today? And you may be able to identify that. If not, just say, well, God, I don't know, but help me be sensitive to that when it comes up. Like when there's something that's needed from me. And that's happened to me even over these last couple of days that I've been doing this, because when I'm sensitive to it, I might have the initial thought before I felt this way, like, oh, this person needs encouragement. This person needs affirmation. This person needs clarity, whatever. But I kind of like, oh, they're probably fine. To say, no, I'm gonna say that. I'm gonna say the thing. I'm gonna give the word of encouragement. I'm gonna give the word of affirmation. I want them to leave my office on cloud nine, because they need to know what God, you know, what the truth about them and all that. So just to go through our day far more intentionally, to start and then go through moments and see them for what they are. And like Jesus, you know, like Jesus and Mary and Martha, that he might look at you and me at the end of the day and say, whatever your name is, instead of Mary, that just blank, whatever your name is, has found the one thing that is most important. And it will not be taken away from her. It will not be taken away from him. Wouldn't it be cool to get to the end of every day and have that sense? And yeah, we're going to do a lot of things, but let's make sure we don't miss the one thing. So with that in mind, I want us to bow our heads together in prayer. And I want us to pray and just think about this, talk to God about this. And if you're up for a conversation with God, then, you know, God is your Father. He loves you. Just talk to him and ask him just to speak into your heart, speak into your thinking right now. Just say, God, maybe ask God just, hey, in this season of life, God, what is the one thing that you want me to make sure I don't miss? Maybe think about a sphere of life right now, like your spiritual life right now, your life with God, your just say, God, in my spiritual life right now, what is the one thing that you really want to rise to the top, the one opportunity that I could easily miss? But God, I don't want to miss it. So just speak in my heart, like, God, what is the one thing, the one opportunity, the one thing that you would bring to the surface? In your relational world, ask God, God, in my relational world right now, God, what is maybe the one person or the one moment, the one opportunity, the one thing that is really something that you want me to make sure I don't miss? And then even just this weekend, say, God, over the next 2 days, what is one thing, the most important thing, among all the things that'll happen, what is the one opportunity that you really want me to seize? And help me know that and do that, be open to it. God, thank you that as Jesus came into this world and taught us so practically by the way that he lived and the things that he said, and just help us live like him. Help us learn the lesson he wanted his friends to know, including us, the principle of the one thing. In Jesus' name, amen.